Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming Outlander series or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 18 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So we have a special treat, at least for us, this week. and that is, not only is the biggest treat the wedding night, but also here on this very special episode, our discussion, we have our friend of the show, Lene. Lene, welcome.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And Lene is also our friend of the show and also resident horse expert, so we will be including her in future episodes whenever we need to talk about horses.
Yes.
I mean, I'm sure it'll come up.
Chapter yeah. 24.
There you go. Okay, she's yeah. She's claimed it.
Yeah. So I guess before we go into anything, let's just hear a little bit about Lene. So Lene, tell us about how you were introduced to the books.
I believe Summer
that would be me.
Loaned me Outlander, and she says, you've got to read this book. And I was like, I started reading, I think, the first chapter, and Summer was like, I called her up and I was like, this is kind of like boring. What is this about again? I thought you said there was time travel and like cute Scotsmen. She's like, just get past the first chapter. I know it's kind of slow at first. And then of course she was right. And I totally got hooked. And then I bought every book and have several copies. And now I just bought like the 20th edition of Outlander just to have. 20th anniversary edition. So yes, I'm hooked. And it's all because of her. And since then, have loaned out my copy and gotten many people hooked.
And have you got a lot of those loaner copies back?
I have, actually. I've been really, you know, I've loaned them. I think I've been really careful about who I loan them to.
Good.
And I've gotten them all back. But, you know, they're the small, most of mine are the small copies. Paperbacks. They're really small. And the print is so small. I've gotten to the point where I just need to replace the whole collection with either the Kindle versions or a larger print. Because it's just like, painful.
Well, the good thing about the Kindle versions is that you have control over how large your font is.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so wonderful.
I mean, if you need
to have it. And it's a good deal. It's a good deal.
Like having bundled?
The bundle for like $50, $40 or $50.
The only thing you can't do is have somebody sign your Kindle.
Yeah, I know.
That's true.
I mean, I guess you could if you took it down and just had them sign the back.
That's why I bought the 20th anniversary edition.
There you go.
So that when we go to LA and hopefully
meet Diana.
Oh,
that's right. That's right. Lene will be joining us in LA. Yes. And as I said, nothing is in stone until it's done.
Yeah.
But we are working very hard. And the three of us very much look forward to the January event.
Yes.
Perfect. All right. So let's do announcements before we get into our read along.
Let me just say, I kind of, warning is not the right word, but I kind of tweeted a few times in jest, but not in jest, already about this one or two times over the past week, maybe even in the past, just the past day or two. Wine is being drunk right now.
Well, let's
in preparation, because certain people on our little round table, half round table here, are more comfortable discussing certain things than others, and so a few of us are drinking wine, and we don't have to say who they are, except that one of them is definitely me.
And that would be you alone. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm not the only boozer here. Come on now.
No, I'm talking about being comfortable.
But I think more importantly, and I'll say, maybe we'll get on this again once we get into the actual read-along portion, is that there is some more mature subject matter. So I don't know if you listen to this with your kids around or whatever, but we may not have, you know, the most child-friendly. We'll do our best to be as PG as possible.
We won't be vulgar.
No.
And
we're not going to ignore the issues that
PG, to me, includes PG-13. Because 13's tagged on to PG. So we could be PG-13.
So we can flash boobs once.
Yeah.
And use the F word once. That's PG.
Okay. Oh, PG-13. We Americans are such prudes. The Europeans won't even give a crud about it.
I don't disagree. But we can discuss things, even if it's clinical, quote unquote, which we won't. But we can be sensual, I think. Not with each other, but...
Oh my God.
So that would be wrong in more ways than one.
So we can be a little sensual in our words, but... Not with each other, as they are all red-faced.
Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
I'm taking off clothes to get ready.
Oh, Lene has actually taken off the first layer. And I may have to change into my
Which
sweater.
Which is surprising, because it's really cold in here.
I've been sipping on the wine, so it warms me up. And I'm
a little warm,
too. Okay, I got to take my hat and my scarf and my jacket off. It's
so
getting too warm.
Basically, this could be a hot mess with me being the only sober one here.
We
I hope not.
We'll have fun. So all I'm trying to say is it'll be PG... worst case scenario, PG-13, we will definitely watch language as far as cursing, obviously. That's not really part of it. But we'll try to be the description, maybe a little bit.
We will attempt to be discreet. However, you have all read the chapter. You know what's coming. Do as not summer, be surprised.
I have to say this again, even though I know we're still haven't got through the announcements, Ginger. But as Summer said to me when I brought up, and I tweeted this too, when I brought up the idea of a podcast, she goes, Ginger, you've read the books and you've seen Spartacus on Stars. You know that there's sex in these books. Are you ready to be able to discuss it? And I said, there will be wine.
Wine will help her get through
Wine, whiskey.
Okay, announcements. So announcements.
For real.
So if you didn't get it last week, happy belated Merry Christmas. Happy belated Merry Christmas.
I enjoyed your song, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, that's very sweet.
That's very sweet. But not only did we have, you know, our Christmases amongst ourselves, but I don't know about you guys, but I woke up Christmas morning to quite a lovely surprise from Stars.
Hello, Kitty. Can I just say, first of all, and I'll start with the good before I give the, it's not bad, but the good before the little knife prick or something, or the pin prick. We got a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Christmas video greeting from the cast. And we even said, maybe not on the air, but we have even chatted, you know, it would be so like them to have something like this to release. You know, they have a whole kit and caboodle to parcel out over the break, however long that is. So this didn't shock me, kind of, but it still surprised me. So when I saw, like, the only negative part was, darn it, Stars, I want to sleep in past 6 o'clock on Christmas, that's it. Yeah. And I didn't. I was up at 6:18 and I was up until that night.
So. But it was a lovely video. I enjoyed it. It was nice. I think they showed all of the main cast members.
Yeah,
we even
very
got to
sweet.
See Got to see Tobias.
Yes.
Oh my gosh!
First time we've seen him
outside of those two pictures that they posted on the actual Outlander Stars website.
He's been very tight-lipped and very quiet.
They've been keeping him under wraps.
I'm glad
we got to see Kate, obviously, and of course, but Tobias was a little bit of a shock.
Yeah,
and Mrs. Fitz looked so Mrs. Fitz.
Her cheeks, man.
She's missing a tooth. Did you notice?
And her teeth were all brown, and she missed had a little gap. I was like, you go, Mrs. Fitz. And then what else?
Lotte Verbeek.
Lotte Verbeek. Oh my goodness, girl started, and people may have either not listened for it, or it could be that I'm totally off my rocker. But I listened to it, as I'm sure a lot of us did, several times. I watched it several times.
She's not. She's Dutch. Then why does she sound American?
Towards the end, it sounded a little bit more American. But if you listen in the beginning, and again, it could be my... It
sounded like she was pronouncing her name with a Scottish accent. I'm Lotte Verbeek.
She said Verbeek.
Sorry.
Which to me is Dutch, because the German double E is the A sound. So I thought, well, Dutch is close-ish. So then Dutch would probably be Verbeek as well. But I've never heard her say it, but we did now, and I think that was right. But anyway, the first thing, not just her name, but as she was introducing herself and saying hello, the first, like, half of it... sounded like she was using her Scottish accent.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh, okay, my worries are pretty much over, because I said a number of months ago when she was cast, or when we talked about her, not a word about her acting, but to be a non-native English speaker, and then on top of the language, which we already know she can speak, she's fluent, but on top of that, to get a Scottish accent, which many people already have a problem mimicking, she's dang good.
Well, I only saw her in the Borgias. Mm. That's what I know her from.
Mm-hmm.
And she was excellent. I thought she was great. Mm-hmm. Very, very well cast in that. And I think she'll be very, very good fit.
Mm-hmm.
Very good fit. So
very, so nice.
But
to
I thought
see
she
her.
Sounded American to me.
Towards the end, she did.
I had no idea she was American. And then
I heard a little bit of.
So I've been corrected.
A little bit of something in her voice. I was excited to see Jasper.
I know, that was such a cool
picture. I love
picture.
That.
Good Jasper. So it was like, oh my Sam, God. Where's Sam? I don't see Sam, I just see Jasper. It was so Jasper. Adorable. So and then, hold on, the Dukes up.
Oh, for
God. What was that? It was Gary Lewis and Graham McTavish standing together. And I think if I read correctly in a tweet or somewhere, Graham McTavish apologized for standing there chewing a cookie. Because, you know, he only said like, yep.
You know what? I thought it was appropriate. As we've talked about previously, Dougal is not really a man of many words, and Colm is the man of words. So it made sense to me that Colm was kind of leading
and
their
the difference in their heights.
They catch them though to do these little snippets of stuff. They catch them in between filming scenes, and they're like, okay, we just want to do this little blurb for
Christmas. Say Merry Christmas.
Say Merry Christmas or whatever you want to say, and they're like, okay. And they're just standing there going, whatever,
But it was, I can't say I know because I don't know. Pretty much every time we've seen, whether it's a clip or that little, the intro bit when they had it at Comic-Con or any kind of the music that they do for the Lesson 1 and Lesson 2, which we'll get to, for how to speak Outlander. Mm-hmm. And then also this Christmas, that music was, kind of like Irish and pipey and background and not nice. And it was Celtic-y. But they haven't told us who does the music yet. Who does that music? Because that is very, very nice and pipey.
It's out.
That explains everything.
Everyone needs to know. It's me. No one else is going to take credit for it. I will.
So, anything else about the video?
I mean, the video kind of speaks for itself. If you haven't seen it yet, please go find it. Almost everyone has retweeted it at this point.
I think it's worth it.
It was so worth it. And I think most people have watched it 5 and 6 times. We also got a new, while we're talking about videos, there's a new How to Speak Outlander video out with Sam and their Gaelic instructor. His name, I believe, is it Adam? It's like a Scottish-looking Adam.
I have to say something about that. Because it's so funny. Because, the guy is obviously, he doesn't seem like an actor. He seems like, he's obviously probably a very nice guy. But he has, zero charisma. So, when you first start watching it, you're like, oh, this is kind of nice. And then as soon as, Sam steps up, you're like, the charisma that emanates off of him, you're like, oh, my gosh, he's going to be a perfect Jamie.
Yeah.
Because it's, night and day. It's just crazy.
And he's not an actor. The difference is
very blatant.
Yeah.
Very blatant.
So this week's word was Creknadun.
I believe so.
Creknadun.
Which I had... I didn't know it was pronounced with a K.
Yeah.
Crick.
Well, I knew it was a hard C, but I didn't know. I've said it in different ways at different times, and that was the GH, because the GH so many times is silent in English. Mm-hmm. So I have said Creknadun, and I've said Creknadun. I mean, whatever. Now we know.
Now we know.
So we need to get any opportunity to see Sam, we're all
pronunciation, for Scottish words for you guys, a book of it.
Well, we do actually have
We're working on it.
Yeah.
Good.
That's all we'll say right now. We're working on it. Not a book, but a contributor. We're working
on
it.
We also got two new images this week from Outlander Stars. At the beginning of the week, we got a picture of a very lovely dog. I think, did we say he's a deerhound?
Deerhound. That's not a wolfhound.
No. He's too small to be a wolfhound, but it's very earnest looking.
He looks very stoic.
Oh, the person is someone in costume.
I think they're
him.
Very regal. I think they're more regal looking than the wolfhounds, even though I love the wolfhounds.
Wolfhounds are just more shaggy.
They're more shaggy.
And they look a little more...
They're larger and they're bigger boned. Mm-hmm. And I love them dearly. They're very wonderful dogs. But the deerhounds have a more regal.
Did you ever see Monarch of the Glen? It's a series based in Scotland about a family they have their castle that's kind of falling apart. And the son basically has to leave his job in London to come back and help basically rescue the taking over, the caring for the place. Hector. Hector was the main guy, the laird. But every time they had him in these shots, he would call out a certain word and all these dogs would come running. And this reminds me, I don't think he had one of these, but the Highlands, the lairds especially, in England, the upper classes were surrounded by their dogs.
Yeah.
They had tons of hunting
dogs.
They
usually had a master of hounds.
Which
that's prominent in English and Scottish and Irish, which they had a master of hounds and a master of horse. Mm-hmm. And they would, literally, their job would be to take care of the hounds and take care of the horses.
And they also had gillies.
What?
Weren't they gamesmen or something like that?
Kind of, kind of. A gilly, I think it's G-H-I-L-L-I-E. They help look over the land. Pretty much.
Okay. Huh.
Not for flowers and stuff, but with the game. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Very awesome. So look into Monarch of the Glen.
So, what do you guys think? You think this is going to be one of Jamie's dogs, or is this going to be a dog that's kind of hanging around?
I think it's
Mackenzie's?
Just going to be a dog.
Someone.
I thought they said a wolfhound was the dog that was Bran.
But he had so many dogs. There was a pack of dogs that meets
there
them.
There was.
Lollybrook.
But they specifically, I remember, I'll have to look it up, but I specifically remember, I thought, I could have sworn it was a wolfhound, him talking about
Bran,
one of them, and how he was.
So it may be Brandon,
it's
may
definitely
not be Brandon.
Not Rollo.
No. No. Rollo's
not
for
only
many books.
Many books from now. You.
Many books from now.
We don't even have a father Ian yet, let alone a baby Ian.
Yeah.
So then the next picture that we got from Outlander Stars was, looks like a chandelier, like a hanging mm-hmm. chandelier mm-hmm. that's lit with candles.
And because it looks kind of close to the floor, it looks like the chain's been kind of brought down.
It looks like
they've
lowered it to light the candles and they'll probably raise it back up.
It just looks, I don't know why. It just looks, oh,
well, they're untrimmed
magical.
Wicks, so all of the flames are kind of,
bendy,
you know, dancing
long
and long.
Yeah.
And they're, oh my goodness.
And they're all rippy looking.
I know.
Yeah.
Very Leoc-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very. Oh. As you tweeted, it's very romantic looking.
Yeah.
Oh, very much.
Very pretty.
That's about all we have to say about that. It's yeah. very pretty. It's just a lovely, lovely shot. Check it out if you haven't yet. So this is a last minute edition because it literally just happened. But Ron Moore jumped on Twitter and was like, hey, y'all, let's do a Q&A. And I just made him Southern even though he's not. He was like, I'll answer some questions if you guys do it right now. And the questions that he asked, some of them I thought were really good questions. Mm-hmm. Someone asked how many episodes were completed at this point, and he responded that there were 4 episodes in the can, which isn't surprising. Mm-hmm. They've been doing them 2 at a time, mm-hmm. and I think that's probably all they had time for before their winter break.
Yeah, and we believed it was 3 and 4. We knew they were working on them. I think we said that we believed they were done, but I don't think we had a confirmation from mm-hmm. Stars or from him or from anyone. But now we do. So that's okay. Cool. That's
so
awesome.
There are 4 episodes in the can. Someone also asked if Ned Gowan had been cast, and he has been cast, Ron stated, but mm-hmm. we still don't have that announcement yet, so we don't know who's playing him, but it's good to know that he is in place. Someone asked if there was any significant scenes that were going to be cut. And he mentioned that the water horse scene would be cut, mm. which we haven't gotten to in the book yet. But I think there's a consensus that of all the things to be cut, that's really not going to be.
It won't affect
too
much.
I'll miss it, but I wouldn't. It's not.
It would be interesting.
It's not vital to
see
the storyline, yeah. But it would be fun because, like we said, it does play a part with further
right.
Happenings.
True.
So,
but I'm sure it saved their CGI budget considerably
sure.
to not have to create a water
horse. Because
that,
I mean,
it's not like they have stock footage of a water horse hanging.
No.
Around.
All we got are these like blurry black and white photos of what Loch Ness monsters could be. So we have no clue.
Right.
Although, you know, besides the further happenings, one of the things I loved about the water horse scene is, I hope it's not my wine talking. One of the things I loved about it is that Claire has, I think in a paragraph or two, she thinks about the water horse and, you know, it if it's Nessie, whatever, being out of, being seeing
being
all
out
of time and being
out of
time like herself.
And she ponders if
yes.
there are these doorways
it's
into time
exactly.
underwater.
And I thought, oh my gosh.
And I thought that'd be a good explanation
or
something like that.
I just
but
thought,
it's not plot
no,
furthering.
It doesn't.
No.
But it chips away. In a good way.
At
it chips
the
away
at the mystique of the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, I'm not even talking about the Loch Ness
Monster.
Speaking
of dinosaur out of time.
No, it chips away at this huge mystery that right now all we know is Claire somehow fell through. We don't know anything about genetics yet. We don't know anything about anything except that she got through. Mm-hmm. And she thinks, because of the fairy tales, that she may be able to go back. That's mm-hmm. all we know. But now she sees this thing and we haven't gotten to it yet. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have it in the series, which is fine. I just thought even better than seeing it was her contemplation about it being out of time. I thought that was so
yeah.
nice.
But on a good note, reading the books and not having them do this in the series, no one's going to go back and be like, oh my God, that water horse was the stupidest thing I've ever seen. It didn't look like a water horse.
Or
this way, for those of you, and I'm sure all of you who are listening now have read the books, and probably all the way through, you get to keep the image of the water horse in your head that
you
created.
You was,
and
yeah.
they're never going to ruin it. So that's something that we can take with us from this.
No, true.
They also asked him what his favorite scene that had been filmed so far was. And he stated that the ladies at the Standing Stone. So I'm assuming the
when they
druids
dress up in the
dancing.
Bed sheets
yeah.
and they dance.
And those
around.
Were, if I'm not mistaken, we didn't see a lot of detail. But there were
there was that one shot that got came
there was
briefly.
There were a few shots. There were a few shots that were tweeted, and I don't know if they were deleted or not, but they were given by that company, the Hewitt.
Yeah, the
it was
crane
a,
company.
A crane company in the UK.
They posted them.
And they tweeted them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes, because they were helping them with the crane with
like,
the lighting.
They were like yeah. long lens shots, like they were
yeah.
from far, far
and you,
away.
And all you can see, you see figures in like...
White, mm-hmm. probably.
I think they were
you
in
could,
white, but they were like covered like head to toe. I mean, they were like beach, not beachy, in like...
they weren't like covering their heads.
No,
I mean, it was,
but
like,
it was like figures draped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were some kind of, probably fake, or who knows where they were. There were some kind of stones there. You could see them. Yeah. You could see the stones, and you could see figures in white, and you're like, oh, it's the dancing ladies. Yeah, so it was really...
It's Mrs. Graham.
Druids!
Yeah.
I'm surprised. Wait, no, we did get it. We did get Mrs. Graham. Never mind.
Yeah. Yep. And also, the other thing we saw was whether or not they were going to be portraying the journey through the standing stones. And he said, yes, but not in the way you expect.
And we've heard, I think...
We've heard that before.
We've heard it before, and I think even Miss Gabaldon talked about that, because I don't know if it was in one of the interviews at Comic-Con or one of her... something she tweeted, but she has spoken or written about it in that she talked to him about how he was going to do it or his idea, and she thought it was really neat. I think that'll be cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Definitely. All right, so now... without further ado, we will move on to the read-along of chapter
15,
Revelations of the Bridal Chamber. Again, if you did not hear earlier, you know the content of this chapter.
Some explicit parts.
We will try not to be too explicit, but the chapter itself was fairly explicit.
There's certain things you can't actually tap dance around, though, you know?
No. Oh, no. But actually, that having been said, when I was reading this again, I thought, she actually, this is so tame compared to other chapters. To other tellings of how...
Yeah.
Of how...
other joinings.
Yes! other couplings.
Other couplings
it
in the
is,
books.
But still, as I was reading it, I was thinking to myself, how can I discreetly describe that happening without using the slang terms that I would use around my friends?
And sometimes it may not be a slang term. I may just have some notes taken, and I may just...
Ginger's going to use nonsense words. I'm going to put that out there right now. She always has, and she probably always will.
I will try not to use them here.
She'll be like,
but I may have something. I may have something typed, and then give it to Summer or Lene to actually read. I had a little bit of a hard time even just typing this, and I'm not being graphic at all, so just bear with me. They're fine. And
oh, I took copious notes. And I didn't hold back.
Okay. Okay, so let us begin. So basically, they've had the wedding. They're back at the inn, and they have a wedding feast of wine, fresh bread, and roast beef. And which is actually not bad for...
Roast beef is good.
I kind of like that for dinner right now.
That's true.
It could be one of the things, though, that Jamie, like, specified, you know, when he was arguing with Duke, we have to have a nice dinner.
Yeah.
You never know.
No, that's true.
He did all these things.
He did all these things specifically for her.
Dougal, or Dugzer, I guess he called him, right? Tells her, kind of pulls Claire off the side and, like, tells her straight away. He's like... Look, woman, this marriage will be consummated, and I quote, with no uncertainty whatsoever. I was like, dang, Duke.
Well, and he reminds her, you know, it cannot be annulled because it would put our necks all on the line.
Exactly.
All
of so it's not just, he's not just getting up all up in her business, although he is. It's for everyone's lives.
Yeah, because they could all hang.
And then I wrote down, and normally I wouldn't write this kind of thing down, but this is like, Dougal pats her on the rump. Is it now that she's family, I guess? I don't know.
He feels a little familiar with her.
Maybe it's like baseball. They're all on the same team.
Like, go, girl.
Go take it.
Go get him.
She kind of is, huh?
I know. That's totally funny. Well,
no one else could take it.
Yeah, so she gets her orders from Dougal.
There you go. And then Dougal compares Jamie to his father, saying that... That... That Jamie should have no trouble in the bedroom department.
If he's anything like his dad, he'll be fine.
Yeah, not awkward at all.
According to my sister.
Exactly.
Oh, Lordy.
What?
And this is where I thought, even though we're not talking about horses and stables, I thought, oh, this is so great. Lene's here anyway. Like, poor Jamie. So she's being basically accosted by Dougal about getting her kit off.
Yeah.
And Jamie's not even there to, like, protect her during this time. And he was out with the horses in the stables. And he comes back, and I wrote down...
orders.
Exactly. Well, but before that, I wrote down a comment about him coming in from the stables. I'm like, couldn't someone have taken care of the damn horses for his wedding night?
I know. I kind of thought the same thing.
Like, that's not
nice. He had one job on this entire trip. And that was to take care of the horses. Nobody else there was there to take care of the horses.
And now his job is to bed his woman. Why can't they take care of the darn horses?
At least on his wedding night.
That's all I'm saying.
But think about it. He doesn't want anybody else taking care of those horses. He's the one who takes care of them. He's very particular about the way the horses are taken care of. And probably the other men are not nearly as gentle with those horses. They're like his babies.
Okay. So Claire thinks that, I think you, one of you already said, Claire is pretty sure that Jamie's getting his orders as well.
Yeah.
Well, it states it.
Oh, sorry. It states it.
Yeah. She sees Dougal pull him aside, and she sees the expression on his face, and she's like, oh, man.
Oh, not yeah. him, too. And then I thought...
I wonder if he got patted on the butt, too.
He,
go get him, tiger.
Well, and then I thought, we have a timeline, because we've always been saying maybe, like, at least weeks, if not a few months, but we have a timeline. Claire says that it's only been 6 weeks since she came through the stones.
Wow.
6 weeks between falling through the stones.
That's
and,
not that long.
No.
How long
and being married to a stranger.
How long did you date your husband before you guys got married?
It was like a year we dated. God Lord.
Could you imagine if, like, 6 weeks after you met him?
My parents were like 2.5 weeks before they got engaged. Mm. And then they got married cool. within, I think, shortly after.
Well, that's a record.
And they're
yeah,
still
but
married.
They're still together, yeah. So yeah.
So there's something for Jamie and Claire there. It can happen.
Well, she just remarks on in six since
yeah
she, six
she's
weeks
thinking
before,
about how she got to this point.
All this like, right. in that short time, exactly.
Yeah,
it's and then, like her life was flashing before her eyes as she was going to the room.
Yeah.
Exactly, and that's what I miss is that she's actually on her way up to the room at this point, going, "What the heck is I? What's
how?
I'm marching to my yeah. doom. Not a bad doom, yeah. but I'm marching
I mean,
to my
I'll
sentence.
Take that doom.
Right? Of all the dooms to have.
And Jamie comes in, and they're both embarrassed and
awkward.
Very awkward. And he says that he tells her that she doesn't need to be afraid of him and that he wasn't going to jump on her. And she laughs, so it kind of helps with the tension.
Yeah.
And
he always tends to do that. Like,
he likes
things
to do
get
that,
kind of
yeah.
awkward. He always is like the first one to like
break the tension.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Usually with
either making
sort of
fun
joke
of
or
himself.
Making fun of himself.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's why we like him so much.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
No, I was just thinking. At that point, Claire like admits to herself, sitting there looking at him. She's like,
"Yeah,
I think that's the first time in the books where she really like admits to herself that
mm-hmm.
she is really attracted to this guy."
Mm-hmm.
Like she's like, "Well, I guess that works in my favor, kind of."
Exactly.
Thing.
And she sees that she's going to have to invite him to touch her.
Yeah,
because he's not going to like start things.
Yeah,
and
she has
so
to
she exactly so she kind of pats the bed and. Oh, excuse me. She realizes she's going to have to invite him to touch her and do considerably more
yeah.
soon.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. And she remarks that she hadn't deflowered anyone before, so how on earth was she to start?
Yeah.
But he pulls up a stool
yeah.
and sits kind of facing her off of the bed. And I thought, mm-hmm. okay, well, there you go, Jamie.
And then of all things he asks her about is her husband.
Right.
Exactly.
So I just think that's funny. He kind of says, well, I know you can't help but think about him
mm-hmm.
at a time like this, but, you know.
And as he takes her hands in his, and she's looking at their hands, and she notices that they're lightly furred. I like when she refers to Jamie as having fur. But that she looks at the differences of his hands with
Frank's.
Yeah,
well, she starts, that's why I think what prompts him
to
ask, because
yeah.
he can, like, read her thoughts, because,
yeah.
like he said, like,
well,
everything shows
her
on her
face. Is like, what do you say?
It's
like,
an open book.
Like a glass.
And so
like
when she starts thinking about how he's furred and, like, Frank was so smooth
yes.
and how she liked watching his hands when he lectured, and then she starts thinking about him, and that's when he asks her about him, and says, well, we have plenty of time to get to know each other because
exactly.
we're going to be here for 3 or 4 days. So
exactly.
What we got to do isn't going to take that long.
Exactly.
So we may as well.
Exactly. Jamie is definitely more scared
yeah, he's
than she is. And he says that that's why he's holding her hand, so he's not going to be shaking. And
mm-hmm.
Claire wonders what exactly Jamie wants to know about Frank. She's like, does he want to know about our sex life?
I know.
That's a little awkward.
Yeah.
About any fear she might have to assuage that, Jamie says he would never expect her to stop loving or stop thinking about Frank because
yeah.
he's not a replacement.
Yeah, he's really understanding about it.
And he wants her to be able to speak of him
yeah.
as she wants. I'm like, that's great, but
this isn't the time.
You're about to do the doodle.
But seriously, he says, and I quote, then I shall do my best to honor his spirit by serving his wife.
Well, you mean servicing,
right?
Sorry.
Seriously, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, no. But yeah, so, and then she admits, how does it come up? But she says, like, she has questions for him.
Claire brings it back down to earth, and after the whole thing about serving his wife, Claire says, that's a very gallant speech, Jamie. And he's like, yeah, I made it up when I was out there waiting with Dougal. Yeah. No, while Dougal was doing the toast.
Yeah.
It's like, as another example of him and his humor. And he's like, yeah, I know, it's pretty good, huh? I just made it up out around the corner, out back.
Yeah. She still has it in her mind to leave, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then she mentions that in her, and she thinks that in her mind. She still has it in her mind to leave as soon as she can.
Mm-hmm.
And so she, like, kind of changes the subject and, like, goes on, like, well, why did you want to marry me anyway?
Exactly. So now, like, she has questions for him. Exactly.
Seriously.
And she also feels...
because to her, it's still a mystery. Like, how does this benefit him? Really?
Exactly. But she feels his ring still in one of her pockets, and she gives his ring back to him and said, you know, here you go. I don't need this now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, okay, don't worry. I promise I'll get you a real one as soon as I can. And that's what makes her think, like,
oh, it's okay. It's not a big deal.
We're good. We're good.
Yeah. I might not be here.
Yeah.
And she says, she assures him that he did her great honor with the wearing of the ring. And
so he asks.
Then she asks her questions.
Yeah, she asks her questions.
And she notices as he's sitting there and he kind of sits back a little bit. She notices the long line of his muscle taut under the heavy fabric. I'm like, yeah, uh-huh, Claire. It's not just one-sided, Claire.
No, no.
And Claire is definitely admiring him. And he says that he'd miss talking to her. And she's like, yeah, what else?
What else, really? Really? Yeah.
And he's like, before I tell you, I need to ask one thing of you. And that is for both of us. And that is for honesty. Honesty, this pledge they make to each other to be honest with each other. He says,
there is room
for secrets, which I thought was, this is awesome.
Right. There is room for secrets, but there is no room for lies.
So if there's something you cannot tell me, I will not push you. I will respect that. There are some things I can't tell you and probably vice versa. But when we do say something, it must be
the truth.
Honest. It must be the truth. So he is basically setting her up for giving her that kind of out. Like, you don't have to tell me that yet. But please be honest.
But he's saying it not knowing that the things she's keeping from him are insane.
Are science fiction.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like I'm sure he's thinking that what she's keeping from him is just, you know, details about her married life and
how
and
she got there.
Right.
And who knows?
Whereas it's really
whether
more
she's
right.
really a spy because really nobody really believes her.
Right.
Yet.
And he says this. They basically make another oath or a pledge to each other to keep honesty always. Their hands are together. Right where their blood oaths had been.
Yeah.
They hold their hands and they put their wrists together. Or at least they hold them like that. And mm-hmm. Diana describes their wounds. And he finally says, okay, I have several reasons. The main reason was to keep her safe. And you can believe it. Okay, to get a little something on the side isn't, or not on the side, in the middle, is...
the opposite on the side.
Not on the side,
above
as
all,
a
he's an honorable person.
Yes, right? And he wants her not to... He has had experiences with Jack Randall. He knows he's a... capital D douchebag that he's a sadist, all the stuff we talked about, and we know worse, much worse to come. He says he wouldn't give a dog to his care.
Yeah.
He offers the protection of his body, and he means it. And Claire compares him with the pilots and infantrymen that she had nursed during World War II. And she knew that, like them, Jamie knew the price of commitment. And so she really believed him when he said, I will protect you, if need be.
With his dying breath.
But if somebody in our time period made that same vow, it would not mean nearly the same thing that it meant for him to make that vow.
No, because he truly knows what it means.
Right.
He's been close to death.
He's been close to death. And she's been around people who have been died and who have died.
They're
and
no strangers
for our cause. Exactly. And she says, well, that's very gallant, but... was that worth the marriage? And now he goes to get wine and the glasses. And he pours the glasses and pours the wine and brings one to each. And he says, this is a toast to Mrs. Fraser. And that kind of freaks her out again. She's like, whoa, that's right, you know. And she feels a little bit of a panic. And so she starts to drink really quickly. And she says, she drinks to honesty. And he admits that he also wanted to sleep with her.
Yeah.
Exactly. And
that she throws her off a little.
Exactly.
She's like, you didn't need to marry me to sleep with me.
And Jamie, like, flips his a gasket.
He's so
like,
scandalized.
What?
What are you talking about? I would never
take you without offering you marriage. And during this, and this is a totally a gender thing. So he says, I think I wrote it down, verbatim. You do not think I would take without offering you marriage. He has... two different ways of saying you, right?
Yeah.
But in the same sentence, and I thought, and this, I could be wrong because I haven't studied Scots enough to look at the breakdown, but I thought, So does you, Y-O-U, the first time it's used, you do not. It's the nominative second person singular, so you. Only one.
Excuse me. Already over my head.
Sorry. And the yeah.
Nominative second, what was?
It's the subject of a sentence.
Okay.
And the yeah, Y-E, and probably pronouncing ye. That wrong.
Ye.
Or
ye.
Ye. Ye. Yeah, I think it's more like that. Ye. Seems to be, because I looked at the differences of all these. To take something or someone, that thing is the object you are taking. It's the object of the noun, so, excuse me, of the verb, so it has to be the direct object, which in language is the accusative case. So that was second person singular again, but accusative. Like, okay, that could explain the difference, right? Two different cases. But then he uses you again, but this time it's offer you, and it's offer something to you, which is actually indirect object. So you is then the dative case. So I'm thinking, you is dative, you is nominative, ye or ye, whatever, is accusative, which is direct. I'm like, okay. So if there's a language person out there who can either confirm or totally correct me, I just thought it was interesting because we see you and ye all the time.
Yeah.
But this is one sentence where one is used twice and one, and they all have different meanings. They all have different linguistic...
See, I didn't even catch that. It's been too long since I took an English class.
It's
been a few years.
It's my fault. It's summer. I'm a language nerd. But
it just have been a typo.
No, it's not a typo. Anyway, I thought it was funny because it wasn't just one being used. I'm like, there has to be a difference. There has to be a meaning for each. So if she has that subtlety down and she's, if not, then I went overboard. But if she does and that, wow, Diana, you are crazy, crazy smart woman. Okay.
Which and then they drink more wine. Anyway.
And they continue to drink.
And they drink a lot.
Drink.
Oh, and they do. Then she thinks about the first time they were together at the castle and her sitting on his lap and all that entailed. And then he comes and sits on the bed with her.
Yes. Finally. And they refill the glasses.
And they refill and drink some more.
But I love the fact that they feel most comfortable with each other when they're touching.
Exactly, because it helps calm their fear a little bit.
It's like a physical connection helping them get to their next physical.
So she realizes that, okay, maybe there is something I can offer him, and she remembers one of the first nights they were not together, but they knew each other, and she was crying, and he pulled her into his lap, and she's like, swing. I mean, there was something there that she knew he was not unaffected by
and
her.
And it was weird, because at the time, like, I don't think she really talks about being attracted to him.
Yeah,
at the
that's
time,
true. But she noticed
he was attracted to her at that time. But she never. That's what I'm saying. Like, this is like the first chapter where she openly admits to herself that she does like this guy, that she is attracted to him. Whereas before, even in that instance, she never. Even at the castle, the first time, she kind of brushed the whole thing off and was like, "Oh, we're just friends, and he's my patient." And that's all she would allow it to be. At that time. And they drink more.
So she also asks him about his family. And as Lene said,
they drink more wine.
They drink more. And there was quite a bit about his family. And I did my best because I do probably take more detailed notes than I need to. But yeah. I tried to squish this into a short card because he told her a lot. And
and I don't know. I don't know. Is it all really... I mean, does it play into this?
The biggest thing we learn is that almost everyone's a Mackenzie, and they're all related.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's the biggest thing. Almost every last
and
one
Lord
of them
Lovett
is uncle
is his
or cousin.
Grandfather on his father's side by one of Lord Lovett's three wives. He had three wives.
And the reason he has Lallybroch, because his father was, I guess you could say, a bastard.
No, wait. It wasn't one of his wives. He was a bastard.
He was a half-sister.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it was like one of the serving wenches, or
I don't know. Yeah,
but I don't know. She was a favorite.
He was a very
he was favored.
Older man.
And once, not young.
He was
at one point, I suppose.
I'm sure.
Once Jamie was born, once he was married, the Dougal and Colum were like, our sister is not living as a tenant. Mm-hmm. So then Lord Lovett or Master Lovett, he granted Brian Fraser. Sorry, Fraser, this land, the Lallybroch.
And she gets super confused by all his, like...
All these back and forth.
I think that, frankly, they should not have drank as much as they did before he started telling her about the convoluted nature of his family. Because she was really confused.
I know.
She's like,
whoa. I'm so confused. Let's leave the cousins out. Because I don't even... Like, yeah. I can't even go there.
And then he basically wraps up the family description, and then basically says, after the second flogging and after he escaped from Fort William, that Jamie was taken to Dougal's house to recover, and then he went to France, and he fought with the French army for 2 years. So this is not necessarily pertinent to them getting it on, but it is pertinent to the backstory, and it's quite brief. 2 years fighting with the French army around the Spanish border, and Claire says that she has a hard time believing that he was with the French army for 2 years and remained a virgin.
Yeah.
And he's like, do you remember his response?
He was like, if you'd seen the girls following
the harlots that followed the French army, you would understand.
You wouldn't have wanted to touch him either.
And then he returned to Scotland approximately a year before now, which is at their wedding. And he spent 6 months alone with a group of men without clans, living hand to mouth. It was when he was basically a free ranger, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then he was hit over the head with an axe or something. We don't know what that truly was. And for 2 months or so, he was not in his right mind. So he has to take Dougal's word for what happened. After that, he was transported to France where he could recuperate, where his uncle, Alexander, he was the abbot of the Abbey Saint-Anne-de-Beaupré.
The abbot of the abbey?
Yes.
Well, Dougal figured, like, if they can't help him, nobody can. Exactly. And if he's without help, an abbey's the best place for him
exactly.
to be.
Exactly.
Some people can pray for him when he goes. Yeah.
So.
And then, and this brings it back to where we are, he healed at the abbey, and then he went back to Scotland and met Dougal at the coast, and they were headed back to Mackenzie lands when they ran into Claire.
Yes.
So that's bringing it all back to Claire.
When they met.
So,
and they drink more wine.
And they keep drinking.
Drink.
And she asks him, why did you come back to Scotland at all? It seems like you were much safer in France. And he's like,
That's another story.
Anyway. He's like, let's...
let's move on.
And
that's when he goes, well, tell me about your family.
Exactly.
Let's change the subject.
And she does, and she kind of tells him the basics and leaving out the details like the automobile and the airplane and that kind of thing. And then she stops about when she talks about meeting Frank. Mm-hmm. She stops. And I saw this and I thought, this is so cool. If they had that awesome chandelier, you know, I would hope that they would keep the 12-hour candle with the marks on it. And so they could see that they had talked for 3 hours. So Claire's like, oh, it's late. Maybe we should go to bed. Go to bed or go to sleep? That made me laugh.
No, not to sleep. Let's drink more wine. So they drink more wine.
They drink more. And then, okay, before we get started on this part, I have to read this. So Facebook user Cheryl Overby from Omaha, Nebraska, sent us a private message on our Facebook page a number of months ago and suggested that when we get to the wedding night, we start a tally chart with how many times Jamie and Claire oomph. And though I'm sure they do so more than is described in the books, like you said, they probably drink more wine than we know because we only know what was written down, What is described. So they probably, we know that they do the deed. Yeah, them.
Well, at one point, towards the end of the chapter, she does specify it had been 3 times.
Yes, exactly.
And he says, you okay?
Exactly. And I was marking down the numbers. So, okay. So I just wanted to get that shout out and we will do our best to keep track. Not this chapter is easy because, like you said, she kind of gives us the number. Mm-hmm. It's going to be having to keep it in our mind. So thank you, Cheryl, for the recommendation. We will probably not put up a tally chart on our website, but we will definitely remark upon the tally, at least for Outlander.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I have to say, one thing that I thought was weird that she mentions is them visiting the privy stool in the corner behind the screen.
Oh, I know. It's not a big deal.
That was totally okay at the time, but I'm like, taking a pee or a horse in like a pot in a corner of a room with a guy you're supposed to be having sex with in a few minutes already weird and uncomfortable,
and there's no baby wipes.
There's nothing. Like, they use usually, like, little pieces of rags or things like that that that's all they have.
They're still going to be unfresh. That's all I'm saying.
It's going to be weird. But people back then smelled...
That's true. They actually smelled real.
They didn't have deodorant.
Yeah.
They were used to smelling.
They were used to normal human smell.
It smells different. So it was just a weird little thing that I noticed that I was like, that would be so weird. Like, on your, like, wedding night, like, I don't think I would go to the bathroom in front of my soon-to-be husband if it was the first time we were together.
I'm trying to think... Oh, not even that. I was trying to think in my head, how long was I together with my ex-husband before I peed in front of him? And I don't think it was the first night we were together.
No, I know.
There are things called doors and things called faucets.
Well, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. Or bathtubs. I don't care. Okay, so...
Wait, you pee in the bathtub?
He suggests helping her get out of her gown because he says, you're not going to sleep in that gown.
Exactly.
So let's get started that way. And he helps her out and... There's tons of buttons and hooks and things, and it kind of, I think, helps them lose their nervousness because he's concentrating so hard on getting this stupid thing done.
And then he doesn't say,
ta-da!
He doesn't say score, but he's like, result! When he's able to get it done. And then she turns around and basically helps him out of his kit. But she spends a little more time with him.
And she sees, you know what? She's
much more sensual. And she unbuckles his belt and she thinks to herself,
might as well be
if
now.
If it must be sometime, it might as well be now. Exactly.
But I was reading it and I didn't
realize
it.
Hold on,
I
wrote
it
down, we agree, Claire. Please continue.
But I didn't realize it until they were prepping for round number two that neither of them had taken their clothes off.
Oh, me either.
She was still in her chemise, and he was in his shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like,
and I thought
basically,
to myself,
so they
really?
Kind of, but people, you know, people used to do that, though. They used to copulate with clothing on.
Yeah, yeah.
That used to be a normal thing to do.
That's
A lot of crofters, I'm sure,
didn't. Well, skirting, maybe it was for, like, warmth. Maybe it was much colder.
That's true. I don't know.
That's true.
But, yeah, and then she, you know, as she is undressing him,
but, I mean,
she runs her hands up his leg.
I just assumed, because they were undressing each other, that they had undressed
each
other.
No, the first time, they don't even, like, undress all the way. And she just runs her hands up his thighs, and she's like, there really is nothing.
And this is what we're going to say. So, this line got me. So, but she was unbuckles his belt and is going up underneath his kilt, and then his kilt is, or I guess she's going up underneath his kilt.
Well, their shirts are down so long. Down like mid-thigh.
Yes. And this is the line. It's like, though by this time I knew perfectly well what most Scotsmen wore beneath their kilts, nothing, it was still something of a shock to find only Jamie.
Yeah.
I love that line.
And what a fun shock.
Yeah. And he pulls her up and he kisses her and she's like, oh, well, he runs his hand down and he's roaming all over her.
He's removing some more clothing.
Yeah, yeah. He unfastens her petticoat.
She had a lot more to remove, y'all.
And she's like, where did you learn to kiss like that, dude? And he's like, I told you I was a virgin, not a monk.
Yeah.
He's like, if I need guidance, I'll ask.
Yeah.
Like, simmer down, Claire, let me do this.
Yeah.
He's like, I think I might be kind of good at this, so why don't you just let me try this out, and then we'll talk about it later.
Yeah.
And she says she wanted him quite badly, and I was like, go, Claire.
Yeah, that's when she realizes, like, well, not only is he ready, but I am too.
I think I may
so
be ready.
I think we're good to go.
She runs her hands over his chest, and he pulls her to him, and she's like, this makes me, and she's all, oof.
Yeah.
He totally, like,
he's
almost
very
knocks the breath
enthusiastic.
Out of
her.
Very enthusiastic.
Very enthusiastic.
And I wrote, this entire scene, while tender, is titillating, and titillating is also humorous. And I said, I believe, and it is a hope too, but I truly, truly believe that they will get this scene right. Because this scene is probably one of the most, besides the, and we're not going to say what happens, but besides the witch trial sequence, and maybe the stones, whatever, this is one of the biggest scenes of the book that it's known for. That people like to chat about.
Yeah.
So I believe they'll get the scene right. Okay, this is where I'm going to slip the paper over to Summer and Linnea, and they can take over from here. I did a little bit of stuff.
I'm not reading that.
You don't have to
reading what?
What?
I'm not reading that.
What?
I tried to take it from
where?
The book. The second paragraph.
The second paragraph?
You know, for somebody who doesn't want to be risque.
I told you.
I'm not reading that.
I told you. I had a hard time typing.
I just want to say there's too many nipples in the sentence you just handed me.
Well, he pulls her on his lap. And he says, specifically, tell me if I'm too rough or to stop. But, you know,
just until I start. Because once I start, I don't
think
I can stop.
Once I'm, like, basically, you know, once
home.
We're joined,
yeah.
Like, I can't stop. So, you know, just
up
stop
until
me before
that
then.
Point.
Stop me before then if you need to. And so she's like, okay, well. And so she pulls him down on her. And that's when he says the first time he, what she mentions, she says, and Jamie Fraser says, he's the one who never curses.
Oh,
and
he said,
says,
holy God.
Holy God. And she says, don't stop now. So, yeah, that was kind of the end of their...
number one.
Their first time.
That was number one.
Together. And as they're sitting together later, he comments that he... here you go. He comments that he didn't realize... You know, she says, well, was it what you thought it would be? And he says, yeah, except, you know... And he kind of gets embarrassed. He goes, I didn't realize you did it face to face.
And that still tickles me.
And she asks him,
poor
you know...
Jamie.
She asks him why. And he goes, well, you know, he talks about... You know, I knew. She's like, how could you have been raised? Like, she's like, she knows, like,
on the
crofters'
land,
cottages,
not, yeah.
too. Like, how could you not have woken up as a kid and seen, like, people copulating next to you?
Because you're in one-room
houses. You're in one-room houses. I mean, and he goes, well, you did, but mostly it was under bedclothes, so you don't, you know the man's on top, but that's all you know.
It's dark, I'm sure.
And it's dark, and he says, and I've seen lots of animals do it, and then he mentions that he had seen a man out in open take a woman once, but it was from behind, and he said, and that was rape, is what it was, and he said, so, but the image always stuck, so he didn't realize that it was any different.
And then he gave a very long list of things he had seen copulating. Yeah.
Growing up on a farm and hunting in the woods, he'd seen, like, every animal known to man mate. And, you know, most animals do it, you know,
that way.
From behind, doggy style. Yeah. So they do it from behind. So that's how it goes. And so I think probably in his mind, yeah, it was kind of a natural way to assume it was done. I would...
But human bodies are so different than animal bodies. Yes. Like, animal bodies are kind of... predispositioned to that position because of the way that they're formed in the hips.
Yeah.
So I think humans being more flexible and walking upright have much more range of motion, if you will.
Yeah. No, it is different.
Range of motion and a different flexibility, yeah.
Yeah.
But four-legged creatures, yeah, their hips are definitely more parallel. Is that right?
They don't have any turnout, really.
No. Oh, gosh.
Well, and they're... Well, we don't need to go into all that. I could tell you all about the animal husbandry classes I've taken, but I won't tell you. I won't go into that. We can go into that later.
Chapter 24. We'll come back and talk about that.
Yeah. But yeah, and then he asks her, he was curious, and he asks her if she liked it. And she's like, yeah, I did. It was pretty good.
She did say that, but then he's like, yeah, Marta said a lot of women didn't really like it, so just get it over with quickly.
Yeah.
And she's like,
what did Marton know about it?
Forget about what he would know about it. He obviously doesn't know very much about it, and his poor partners are being neglected.
She says, like, the slower the better. So...
She's like, take your time.
And then she says, she asks him to take his shirt off so she can admire him.
So she can look at him.
And then he does the same. He's like, fair's fair. Now you do that. Yeah. And he does. And they look at each other and he says...
And they touch each other.
Exactly. And he says, I know once is enough to make it legal, but would you mind doing it again? And she says with a straight face, no, I wouldn't mind.
Yeah, trying desperately.
That's number dos.
Yeah, that's number two. But before that, I think it's funny... When he's looking at her and he's so intent on looking at her and kind of touching her, and she's like, what, have you never seen a naked woman?
He's like, not
he goes, not
close
one so
before.
Close and not one that's mine.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
It was very, very cute, very sweet. And then, okay, so they get up later.
They're finally hungry.
They finally realize they're hungry. And so poor Claire decides to go down to the kitchen.
He tried to stop her.
He did.
In his defense, he tried to stop her.
She threw on her
chemise
and a blanket and a coat or something and her cloak, and she opens the door and is meted with this huge barrage of like
15 men,
people applauding and laughing and like, has he you know, if you're still walking,
he didn't do the job
right. And yeah,
and then somebody else says, if you've worn him out, I'd be happy to take his place.
Oh, now Murtaugh says the best. Doesn't he hold up a mutton bone? He goes, no, lads, after... Isn't it Murtaugh?
He says,
he holds up this huge mutton bone. He goes, after Jamie, she'll need something like this to satisfy her.
Murtaugh, you wee beast.
Yeah, I thought that was freaking
That hilarious. Was funny. And then after she's like, what the what? And she goes back in, and Jamie's shaking with laughter.
He's like,
I tried to tell you. And he ends up going out to get it. And the thing that made me laugh of what everyone said to him was it Dougal? The funniest one, I didn't write down who said it, was, oh, it was Rupert. He was like, how was your first time, Jamie? Did you bleed?
Which I find interesting, because in that day and age, men, like, they'd go off and sow their wild oats and do whatever, whereas women were expected, I mean, it's the same as similar standard now,
It was more enforced.
And so for him to be a virgin and everybody knew.
Yeah.
Like all the guys knew.
Well, it had to be pretty obvious when they would all, you know,
talk about it.
Or when they would all go somewhere together and like couple off or whatever and he just doesn't.
Go to a brothel and he wouldn't go or I don't know. Like, yeah. I just wondered about that. Like, I don't know. It just seemed interesting to me that all of them knew.
So he gets the stuff and he goes back up with food.
And they drink more.
And they eat some. And they eventually basically get back at it and doing the
I like that he brought enough that they wouldn't have to go back downstairs for a while.
We'll be okay for a while. We don't have to go down there for a while, no. And this third time,
yes,
she has
three,
the big O.
She does have the big O, and she says
and he thinks he hurt her. He's like, oh my God, are you okay?
Did I hurt you? Oh my gosh. Yeah, he freaks
and
out.
But she describes the way he makes love is with unflagging joy that made her think male virginity might be a highly underrated commodity. And this is when Diana says, yeah, it's their third session. And she cries out and he's like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. And she enlightens him on the female O a little bit. And he says,
no, but he's inspecting her for damage.
he's like, what did I do to hurt you?
He's like, are you sure?
Yeah, and she explains, like, what exactly happened. And he goes, does it happen every time?
And she says, well, why don't we do it again? And he's shocked that she can go again so quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and she states, like, well, it only happens if the man's a good lover. And he's like, well, then you need to show me what to do next time so I can do it again.
And then I wrote down joy and pain, Lene and Summer. You guys can chat about that whole.
Oh, well. She says, she tries to explain, well, it wouldn't be a bad thing if there was a little bit of pain involved. And he's like, what are you talking about? And she, you know, is explaining how women are different and they can, like you said, they can go more than once right after each other. And he's like, I noticed.
Well, the way she explains to him that a little pleasure, I mean, a little pain with your pleasure is not always a bad thing, it's...
She performs...
By pleasuring him, if you will.
Yeah.
With a little bit of pain, right?
With
fellatio, basically.
Which is Latin. It's a clinical term.
No, but I think it's interesting that Diana is so descriptive.
Without being perverse.
Because you know what's going on, but it's not, like, so
detailed.
It's
not like 50 Shades of Grey.
No, definitely not 50 Shades of Grey.
They only had 20 shades back then.
No.
I'm just kidding.
and then at that point, he's like, okay, I get it. I get what you mean. You know, because she asks him, you know, does it hurt a little? And he goes, yeah. Did you want me to stop?
No,
don't stop. So he's like, yeah, I get it. And he goes, well, does it feel when she's finished? He says, does it feel the same when somebody does that to you? And she goes, I don't know. No one's ever done that to me. And
this is something that people have talked about in the past, and that is how
Frank doesn't go downtown.
Frank was an uptown guy.
Maybe that's why their marriage didn't work when she came back.
I don't know. The little bits we see of Frank or hear of Frank in the first two chapters, or
maybe he was just buttoned up so tight he couldn't.
Frank was all ready to do it in the bushes and in the.
But their marriage was, you know, they hadn't actually
spent a lot of time
been
there.
Together. Yeah, spent a lot of time together, and she even describes that, like, you know, our marriage hadn't quite gotten past the basics during our lovemaking sessions.
And they never really got past the honeymoon phase.
That's true. They were trying to have a second honeymoon. Yeah. That was actually...
It's kind of understanding. It's a little understanding of why they never really got to that point. So, and he says, what does Jamie say? He says something like, well, I'll have to try it sometime when I have the energy, like maybe next week.
Exactly, next week sometime.
And then I think they go to sleep. They both fall asleep.
And then she has a nightmare. She has a dream. And she must have made some noise to realize.
Stressful noise.
Yeah, because Jamie is, she wakes him up somehow with the noise. And he, like, pounces out of bed, has a knife in his hand. He's, like, crouched on the ground, looking around, looking at the door.
Inspecting the whole area.
Yeah. Like a warrior, like a protector. And when he realizes everything is okay, he sees that she has tears in her eyes and she basically says, it's okay. And he says, is it me? Can you not bear me?
Oh,
and that's so sad. And she
reassures him that
she
does.
But then she said, if I couldn't bear you, what would you do? What could you do? And he said, well, he could talk to Dougal about getting an annulment on the grounds of non-consummation. And so basically lie.
And she laughs at him. And she's like, with all the witnesses?
Well, she does not hate him. And he says, I don't hate you either. There's many good marriages that have started with less than that. Yeah. And then the line comes.
This is my favorite line. This is mine too.
And I'm not even going to try my bad Scottish accent. He says, don't be afraid. There's the two of us now. And the chapter ends with Claire remembering the knife above her head. Being reminded that she is in this time now. Not just the time, but also
like what
married
would possess
to
a man
this
to
guy.
Need,
exactly.
To need a knife
what kind
above of, his bed.
Exactly.
On his wedding night.
On his wedding night. And that's how the chapter ends.
Whew. So I finished
you
my
got
wire.
Through, I did.
She is a little red faced.
And I didn't even bleed.
I know. Thank
Sorry.
God.
If you cut that out, I'm going to be upset.
Okay. So.
Gracious.
Thank you, everybody, but thank you, Linnea, so much for joining us. And
or else it would have been Summer talking the whole time.
Because once I hand the paper, I'm like, it's just helpful.
Well,
so,
here's the thing that made me laugh about what she wrote on that paper. She's like,
She was so explicit.
She was like, well, you read this. And I was like, why would I want to read that? That's terrible. It was an unexpected thing to be handed.
Okay.
That wraps up our read-along for the week. Join us next week. We will be covering chapter 16, entitled One Fine Day.
Thank you again, as always, so much for listening. A special shout-out and thanks to our friend of the show, Linnea. You can follow Linnea on Twitter if you would like, at Neiruzu. That's N-A-E-R-O-O-Z-O-O. Again, thank you.
I'm not very exciting.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
But she could be with the right inducement.
You know, with wine, she's a hoot. So, so there we go. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/outlanderpod. Or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com. I dreamt it last night that my young